Please be advised that the following program contains language and content of an adult nature.
I'm Ron Rifkin.
I'm Jane Kaczmarek.
This is Brian Bedford.
I'm Stephanie Zimbalist.
I'm John Hamm.
This is Charlaine Woodard.
This is LA Theater Works. I'm Susan Lowenberg.
Everything in paleoanthropology and almost all of science has political overtones. You want to have superlatives, the first of this, the biggest of this. It has to have some special quality to stand out. The general trend is to immediately make a story out of everything.
That's Russell H. Tuttle, professor of anthropology at the University of Chicago, speaking to us about the drive for sensationalism in popular science. By the early 20th century, the growing mass media offered unprecedented access to groundbreaking scientific research and discovery. But it also provided a platform for those seeking to glorify their work at any cost. Fake by Eric Simonson, the Steppenwolf Theater Company production, recounts a real-life controversy that confounded the scientific community for nearly 40 years. This week on LA Theater Works. In hour one of Fake, in 1914, an astonishing discovery is made.
Piltdown Man, the missing link between Cro-Magnon Man and modern man.
That could put England on the archaeological map.
There has never been a man so ancient found in the English soil.
But as doubts about its authenticity begin to surface...
It's a fake, isn't it?
What's a fake?
Your Piltdown Man.
The truth becomes harder to suppress.
They have this idea that most of the stuff you find is someone else's.
The skull is authentic!
And now, Hour 2 of Fake by Eric Simonson, starring Frances Guinan, Kate Arrington, Alan Wilder, Coburn Goss, and Larry Yondo. Produced by LA Theater Works.
Quies in celis sanatigitur nomen tuum. Fiat voluntas tua sicut in cielo et in terra.
Far!
Paneam nostrum quotidianum di nobis hodie, et dimite nobis debite nostra sicut et nos dimitimus debitoribus nostris.
Pardon me, did you... Oh, Shardam.
Monsieur Doyle. Et nos inducas in tentationem.
Don't let me interrupt.
Sed libro noso malo. Amen. Bonjour, monsieur.
I apologize.
Is nothing. I'm finished, though my dialogue is, you know, non-ending.
Ah.
Is your golf ball?
Sorry.
Here you are.
Supposed to play it where it lies?
Oh.
No matter.
I apologize.
What are you doing at the Piltdown site? Haven't you any help?
I have not been on this project for quite some time now. I thought you might know that.
I don't know everything.
You know well enough to make accusations.
Any relatively aware person, any thoughtful person would draw the same conclusion.
There is this theatrical side to you which you cannot resist. You want to have a room full of suspects you can accuse.
Suspects are witnesses. It worked for Hamlet.
Hamlet? Ah, the play he do for the king.
Dawson and Woodward were sufficiently outraged, don't you think?
How else should they be?
Calm, unmoved.
These are my friends, Monsieur Doyle, and you insulted them that night. You insult me too.
If I am wrong, I will certainly apologize.
Yes, but you will have already done them great harm. Me also. What do you do if you ruin our reputation without intending to, and we are innocent?
I can't think about that.
No? Maybe the truth is what we already know.
I seriously doubt it.
I just spent the last 2 hours here talking with Miss Eastman.
She was here?
Yes. I thought you knew.
How the hell would I know?
That is why you are here, no?
I came to play golf, ma'am.
Really?
Yes. Miss Eastman was here. Capital.
She write to me, yes, asking me to see the site of the excavation. I say to her, Mr. Dawson is the better guide, but they are not on speaking terms now.
No, they had a falling out.
That is a shame. But after all, she is not in the business of making friends.
So how did it all come out?
Pardon?
Your meeting.
Oh, is interesting. She is not convinced of me.
She told you that.
I can see it. We talk a lot about God.
My.
Yes.
And that led to her not believing you.
She is an atheist. And in my experience, people who have lost their faith in God have also lost their faith in people who represent God.
I have a thermos of tea. Would you like some?
What about your golf?
I'm on the 9th. I could use a break.
Wonderful.
I'm afraid I myself came to the same conclusion as Miss Eastman.
Mr. Darwin has unfortunately had a very bad effect on our recruitment course.
The way I went had nothing to do with Darwin.
How can you be so sure? His ideas have seeped into the very consciousness of humanity.
My.
There is no avoiding him. The Jesuits, they have it twice as hard, you know, because so much of the culture has a foundation of the education. You cannot expect a thinking person to accept the mystery of God while at the same time study about the absolutes of science. I, for one, am not a man who is willing to sacrifice his brain for his faith, you know?
No, I don't know.
If you accept that there is a God, why not ask science to assist on the proof of that assumption?
Because the question can never be answered.
Perhaps not by science, but by philosophy, no? Or by process of the heart, by the faith. Let me ask you something, Sir Doyle. Do you believe in love?
That's an absurd question.
Is it?
As much as I believe in all the other emotions.
Hmm.
But it's not a matter of belief, is it? Love is temporal. It shifts, doesn't it?
Well?
I prefer loyalty to love.
All right, then, loyalty. Either way, what you are talking about is faith. When I was a child, my family, we lived in Switzerland, in the country. That is when I started being interested in these rocks and fossils and all this stuff of the world. You look at it a certain way, you cannot deny there is a wondrous beauty to the whole design of nature. At the same time, there is one awful sense that everything around us is the struggle and death and pain. I have 7 brothers and sisters. 2 of them died when they are children. For most around me, it strengthened their faith in God. It was an awesome God they knew, one that was sorting out the good from evil in this world. But for me, I cannot accept that. Is my sister, who is 8 years old and innocent, is she really part of this awful correction the Lord is trying to make? So, same time as this, I start to school with the Jesuits and study to be a priest, but I am stubborn, no? I refuse to give up the searching of these rocks, and I am at the same time wondering about is this feeling that is telling me things in the Bible and things about Darwin are challenging one another. It is the folly of man that he will never put it all together. Some priests, they tell me, embrace the mystery. I say, okay, I embrace this mystery, you know, but I am human too. You know, one of the things that most separates us from other animals.
I'm sure you're going to tell me.
Something I call the restless adjunct to human instinct. Unlike, say, a koala, who survives on one thing, the leaves of the eucalyptus, or a snake, you know, he is to have a mouse from time to time. Humans and other primates, they like to have a variety of sources always to survive. The koala, he get his eucalyptus for the day, he is fine. The snake, he get his mouse, he is okay. He's single-minded, you know. The human, though, he is curious always because his survivability, it depends on a variety of things. Berries from the bush, fish in the stream, a bird to catch in the snare. God makes us this gift of curiosity, is why we survive and thrive, is also why we cannot accept mystery unsolved. We believe in God, but he's not good enough. We must know him, you see.
But I've solved the mystery of God.
I know what you are going to say, but you are wrong. And I have a theory about that, too.
Do tell.
When we are not collecting berries, we are left with excess of curiosity. Also, if we do not work, we create problems to solve. Mysteries to unravel, just to feed the fire that is curiosity, is why we have sports, no? Or a play to go to? Or an affair with the pretty women to have?
We hate to be bored.
That is exactly what I say. You wrap yourself in writing these mysteries to make up for the one big mystery and laugh you cannot solve and have rejected. And anyway, you transfer all this restlessness in your life. You might devote to religion, and you do things like throw fuel on the fire that is this suspicion of Piltdown. Is not a mission so much as a pastime.
So your restless curiosity kept you searching for God.
And the mysteries of nature as well. In school, I am now not only collecting rocks and fossils, but digging for bones. And I am thinking someone or something, God, is doing this nagging at me. Maybe, just maybe, he is telling me something. I start to think about not faith only, or science only, but a third solution.
Go on.
Why would God give us this wonderful power to think and imagine unless he wanted us to discover the true nature of ourselves? It is yet to be fully formed, but I have the basic look. We are not at the end of the development as a man. We are, in fact, in the middle somewhere. Compared to what we will be, we are as Neanderthals are to us.
That I'd agree with.
Someday we will be completely, absolutely what God intended us to be. An animal with an exquisite brain, perhaps twice the size we have now. Incapable of deceit, jealousy, or violence. A species dedicated towards good and a more perfect version of God himself.
A big brain, you say?
Enormous.
With a big head to go with it?
Of course.
Interesting.
But this is thousands, maybe millions of years away.
To what end?
Sorry.
The point of this...
I call him Omega Man. We evolve to this conclusion, and then there is the second coming, of course.
Oh.
We'll rejoin God at the foot of his throne in heaven.
The four horsemen and all that dead rising from graves.
Exactly.
I see. Well, you are by far a more interesting man than I had imagined.
You don't see the value in this idea.
No, sorry, I don't. Perhaps
it's no more implausible than the theory of speaking to the dead.
My well-publicized association with spiritism is hardly the stuff of organized religion.
I am not criticizing you. I believe it is entirely possible to talk to the dead.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do. As I believe anything in the world under God is possible. More likely, though, your convictions are nothing more than a result of our natural instinct to want something more beyond life on Earth.
My studies have led me to hard and fast proof it is entirely possible for the soul to live beyond this mortal coil.
So have mine.
But I don't draw my conclusions from an ancient book, which is essentially a collection of children's tales meant to keep the masses in line.
You know, this is funny to me. I just had the same discussion with Miss Eastman exactly.
And she was persuaded.
Of course not. It's difficult to change the mind without instigation. One must either be a child whose opinions are yet to be formed or a person in the throes of crisis, at which point the mind either turns to God or away from God.
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, Father, but I left the church when I was 19, and nothing extraordinary was happening in my life.
What about your interest in the occult?
Spiritism?
Pardon?
My mother passed, that is true.
I am sorry.
4 years ago.
Have you spoken to her?
She has reached me through letter writing.
I see.
I have proof. You don't believe it.
Does it matter? It is only your belief that matters.
How do you mean?
Does the, faith you have in spiritism... Does it help you to sleep at night to know your mother is somewhere out there in a place where you can find her?
You speak to me as though I were a child.
No, I only to say this to suggest that you and I are not so far apart.
I miss my mum.
Oui.
I suppose we can use all the comfort we can get.
Absolutely.
My mother's passing is nothing compared to this war that's coming.
You think we go to war?
Oh, I know so. It's going to fill the cemeteries, you mark my words.
I hope you are wrong.
I wish I were. You said Miss Eastman was unconvinced. What do you mean?
I do not know, but her tone changed. While I was showing her the excavation site, my foot hit something. I think a result of all the rain recently. Is some sort of tool, I think.
Well, the edge isn't sharp. It's Not heavy enough to be a club, but it's obviously man-made and well-made at that.
I haven't had a chance to examine.
And you say you uncovered this just as Miss Eastman was interrogating you?
Yes.
Simple as that. Just kicked the earth and another priceless object.
That was her reaction. I almost wished I'd not found it.
Rather frightening, isn't it, Mr. Moody? These dusty museum rooms.
Oh, you get used to it. The light switch is around here somewhere. There we are.
Ah, I love old places. I bet you've got lots of secret passages running down underneath and whatnot.
If we do, Mr. Billings, I don't know of them.
Well, they wouldn't be secret then, would they? We used to come to the museum when I was a lad. My school did. I'd see all these small doors with signs on them that said general public prohibited. Of course, those were the only places we want to go. Secret passageways.
Just offices, mostly. This room's where Woodward and Dawson spent most of their time 40 years ago researching Piltdown. Now it's the place used to prove it's a fake.
You know what that's called? Irony.
Yes. Mr. Billings, I thought I might...
It's exactly what I thought it might be. Dr. Frankenstein's laboratory. Hello. It's the Piltdown skull.
Sorry, please don't touch.
Right. Some things never change. Mind if I take some photos?
I'll be my guest. I wanted to... well, here. These are a few suggestions on the direction you might take.
Sorry?
With your article. Accomplishments of the museum in the last decade. Fiscal reports.
Right.
We're financially sound.
That's always good.
There's information on an exhibit we've got coming up on reptiles. Should be a lot of fun.
Marvellous.
And we have an agreement.
How's that?
You'll not print till after the press conference.
Of course.
And you'll be kind, you promised.
I'll print the truth.
Thanks, but a kind of a truth.
I've no wish to besmirch the name of English science.
That's right, thanks.
Though someone should pay. Don't you think?
Sorry?
Whoever did it.
Right.
Way back when.
Someone should pay, you say?
I think you'll get points for coming clean, Mr. Moody.
Certainly, but...
When does scientists get here?
Soon. I just hope, and this is the last thing I'll say on the subject, I just hope when you write, you'll keep in mind the reputation of the museum.
What's this?
Electromagnetic microscope.
That's a mouthful.
I just acquired it.
If we knew who did it, you know, planted the hoax, it'd take a lot of pressure off, wouldn't it?
Unless, of course, it was Woodward.
Yeah, but even he would deflect blame from the institution.
Oh, I don't know.
What's this? Some kind of bone?
Mr. Billings, please.
Oh, sorry.
Some sort of tool. We don't know for sure. A priest named Chardin found it about 2 years after the skull was discovered.
Who are you?
Jonathan, this is Henry Billings. He's a reporter for the Daily Mail. I invited him to take pictures of our progress.
There's a press conference tomorrow.
And Mr. Billings is a friend of the museum's. I told him as a friend he could get a leg up on the competition.
I'm a big fan of the museum.
Yes, I'm sure you are.
This is Jonathan Cole, leader in his field.
Cole.
It was on his inspiration that we embarked on this search for...
Bloody hell.
For...
The search for the truth.
Ah,
pleasure to meet you. Congratulations are in order, sir.
Leg up.
Morning. Sorry I'm late.
Douglas Arndt, meet Henry Billings of the Daily Mail.
Mr. Moody tells me you came to some conclusions.
How's that?
It's a fake. 100% forgery.
So much for the press conference.
Jonathan.
In truth, Mr. Billings of the Daily Mail, as you can see, we haven't finished our work yet.
Hi, Douglas Arndt.
American.
Don't hold it against me.
Mr. Arndt comes to us by way of the University of California in Los Angeles.
That right?
His advances in fossil dating have made this entire venture possible.
These advances, they are...
Incredibly complicated and far too difficult to explain.
That's good.
Right, well, how about we let these gentlemen get to work?
Might I have a photo?
Well...
A quick one.
That'd be okay, Jonathan.
Be my guest.
You'll only take a second.
How about a candid, then? Just Mr. Arm.
Splendid. You go to work. I'll be the fly on the wall.
How about I'll take a look at this artifact, right?
Mm.
I'm examining the artifact. Examining.
Wonderful.
Have you shown him this, Paul?
Well,
hands me a lap.
Doug.
Cricket bat.
Go on.
Honest to God, it was Jonathan who cracked it finally. But look here, Mr. Billings. Charred bone, under the microscope, clearly whittled to look like some kind of implement. But what? What tool? What weapon? Cricket bat. The first Englishman. Wasn't that what Arthur Woodward called it?
Yes.
Cracks me up. I wouldn't be surprised if he's the one, you know. It was all a big joke. The first Englishman, get it?
Yeah, good one.
Or, this is my other theory, someone else is trying to make Woodward out to be a fool or draw attention, a cry for help. Someone, please get a clue. It's a fake, damn it. Unbelievable.
On Friday, then. Thank you very much, Mr. Billings.
Yeah, we'll talk about it on Friday.
Thank you, Mr. Arndt.
Well,
carry on, gentlemen.
No, we won't.
What?
Talk about it on Friday.
But...
No discussion, Doug. We stick with the facts, right? Know who done it?
Jersho?
Apparently.
What else do we need to do?
The flooring test on the rest of the hippo canines. If we get that tonight, I may just be able to finish this paper by Friday.
Sorry, I'm late.
I don't...
What?
Long night last night.
There's a group of German students on the floor below me.
Never should have left our flat.
Yeah, well.
Bunch of rowdy krauts in lederhosen. They're the worst kind, aren't they? Maybe worse than Lithuanians. My fiancé is Lithuanian.
Nervous?
Perhaps. So distracted I can't keep my mind on my work. And cat's no help. Just when you need a little diddle in the middle of the night to get to sleep, she's gone completely off the sex drive and turned frigid as ice itself. China, is that too familiar for you?
No.
Of course, she wasn't around much last night. I took that as a sign. Things are at an impasse between us, and I wonder if we will last.
I'm sorry.
No need to be sorry, just stating the facts, as it were. As they are. But things always work out in the end, isn't that what they say? And they say it incessantly. God closes a door and he opens a window or some such crap.
Is there anything I can do?
The fluorine test, please.
Of course.
Actually, what I was saying just now, I was being a bit disingenuous. It's a cat, you see. She's confessed.
To what?
To you two. To having a go at one another. The late night trysts. Playing me for the cuckold at all.
I don't know what to say.
Don't say anything. I'll do the talking from now on, you bloody fool. Do the flooring test and get the hell out of my sight.
Jonathan.
Do you have any idea what it's like to have someone disappear from you right in front of your very eyes, suddenly, and then slowly? You pathetic optimist. You, Mr. Sunshine Boy from sunny L.A.
Maybe I'll take a break, come back when you're done.
You do whatever the hell you want. And I will never be done, by the way. I'm all about the work now. Yesterday, today, from now until the end of time.
How's Kat taking it?
She doesn't know.
Doesn't know what?
Doesn't know I know.
But you just...
It all started with the weekly church going. Kat used to be religious before she met me. Oh, I'm a bad influence, I suppose. I suspected she was yearning for a conversion, or rather, reconversion. I mean, suddenly she's hiding, reading C.S. Lewis, for God's sake, but nothing too terribly out of the ordinary. And then you come along, and whammo, she's off to church once a week. Well, my guess is the two of you won't last another month. But that's neither here nor there. Actually, I'm rather impressed with myself. As I said, no hard evidence on you two, just suspicion on my part, a sort of sinking feeling. But as a scientist, you can't make assumptions based on feelings and intuitions unless it's someone like you who assumes his life away to the point of believing in a big man with a grey beard who lives above the clouds. No, but where was I? Oh, yes. Evidence. I'd have looked like a fool if I'd confronted you or the two of you, so I'd lied and said your accomplice had confessed. Oldest trick in the book. Haven't you read Sherlock Holmes? Oh, I forget. You're an expert. But come to think of it, I can't recall a single episode in which he did exactly that. Oh, he was far more clever than you or I. I thought you said you were going to take a break. Or maybe simply to step outside for a good old-fashioned breather. I can't imagine any of this is too pleasant for you. Sorry, I have to get back to work. And if you're going straight to Kat, you won't mind telling her the engagement's off. And I'd appreciate it if she were out of the flat by the time I get home.
But we can only test their value by further inquiry. The most difficult crime to track is the one which is purposeless. Now, this is not purposeless. Who is it who profits by it? There is the French ambassador. There is the Russian. There is whoever might sell it to either of these. And there is Lord Holdhurst.
Lord Holdhurst?
Well, it is just conceivable that a statesman...
Hello, Rebecca.
Doyle.
Welcome back to my humble abode. I haven't kept you waiting, have I?
Not long.
William Gillette, you know him?
Sorry?
The man on the gramophone. He's American, you know. I couldn't see another man playing Holmes. Wonderful chap. Tall, thin, married once, became a bit of an eccentric after his wife died. Stayed indoors for days on end, unless he was compelled to perform, but that's the artistic temperament for you, isn't it? Bit on the daft side.
I wouldn't know.
Oh, I think you know. You're a bit of an artist yourself.
Oh, do you? You think I'm crazy.
Touched would be a better word. But take it as a compliment. I'm a bit so myself.
Oh, stop. That's not why I came down.
Shame.
Though I could change my mind.
E. Gillette played Sherlock Holmes all over the world, and now has recorded it for posterity on these discs.
He wants to live on in people's memories. It's the best kind of immortality.
Perhaps.
The only kind, actually.
I think they're only half successful. May as well just read the book.
Oh, and I have been.
Sorry?
I've been reading up on you.
You know, I like Americans generally. They've never bothered me the way the English do. I sometimes think I was born on the wrong side of the Atlantic.
You remind me of Teddy Roosevelt.
I get that a lot. You know, if he were still president, the Americans wouldn't be pussyfooting about in this matter of global conflict. Does anyone in America take it seriously, I wonder?
About as seriously as you all do over here.
Yeah, you're right about that. You know, I wrote a book once about a German U-boat. Listen to me, I can't shut up. Yet you've come all this way for a visit, and I can't stop talking about myself. You needn't... Scotch, I'm having one. You needn't have come down.
No, thank you.
I was to be in London next week.
I would have been gone by then.
What about our article?
Finished.
Oh, may I see it?
I haven't written it yet.
Oh, you lie then, because the hardest part is putting it down on paper.
Aren't you dying to know what I found out?
Oh, I was right, wasn't I? The science in it stinks to high heaven.
Yes.
Though...
What?
I would be careful not to mention any names.
You mean...
No need to point fingers.
I thought that's what you wanted.
It would only cloud the issue at hand.
Which is?
To reveal that Piltdown is a hoax.
But... I can't just say it's a fake.
Why not?
I'm not a scientist. I can't prove it scientifically. I need a culprit. The idea was, at least I thought the idea was, that I'd solve a mystery.
And you say you did?
Maybe.
Well, what is it you have?
I have... A friend back in the States, he thinks the cranium is maybe a couple hundred years old, and the jaw, oh, get this, The jaw is from an orangutan.
A monkey?
Yes.
Good Lord, will he say so on record?
Yeah, I think.
Well, there you go. Proof from a scientist. There's your story.
Now, he got me thinking, though. Yes. The orangutan bit. You know the Edgar Allan Poe story?
Murder in the Rue Morgue.
Yes.
Oh, Mario turns out to be an orangutan.
Right. Maybe the fellow who did this is a practical joker.
I'm telling you, who did it doesn't matter. Well,
just for fun, then.
All right, then. We have a practical joker.
Now, it's got to be someone who knows his business, first off, but also someone who might want to get caught.
How's that?
Well, otherwise, what's the point if it's a practical joke?
And who might that be?
Not Dawson. He's not smart enough or well-read enough.
Granted.
Or that willing to put his career on the line. You know, why draw attention? Why put his other findings at risk?
Woodward, then.
Oh, come on. He's completely humorless.
Right.
The man has no imagination.
But maybe it's not a joke. Forget about Poe entirely. Woodward still stands to gain tremendously.
No, I thought of that, but he wouldn't have had the opportunity.
How's that?
Well, London's a 4-hour drive from here. The man's on a 12-hour day. Aren't you proud of me? I'm running down all the suspects.
Go on, then. Our priest friend Sherdan.
Oh, yes. The priest is interesting. Of course, you know that. And to find that thing, that weapon thing in the middle of all this, that's extraordinary.
Yes.
You were there the day he found it.
So are you.
You ran into him playing golf.
That's right.
Accidentally.
Who else?
Sherdan told me all about his theory.
Oh, about the second coming?
Crazy.
He has got an imagination.
Now, he thinks Piltdown confirms his ideas.
How so?
Well, you know, man's cranium is expanding at this extraordinary rate.
Motive?
Yes.
He wanted to shore up his theories and his nuts enough.
Yes.
Though it might be, again, you know, that he was working in concert with Woodward.
Correct. Chardin's never been outside Europe. That's where you get these things, old monkey parts.
Right.
Right, he would have needed help, and Woodward has access to these things, hippo's teeth.
Yes.
But Chardin was stuck in his seminary in France most of last year, I checked.
That's
now,
right.
Now, he might have had time to assist, aid and abet, I mean, but no, he couldn't have led the whole thing. And I've already ruled out Dawson and Woodward. See, none of these men fit exactly, so that got me thinking maybe there's, I don't know, someone you didn't put on the list.
Right.
Yes.
Who do you mean?
You.
You're joking.
No, you are. Or maybe you're not. I don't know. I read your book, this book, The Lost World.
Oh, I wrote that 2 years ago.
Yes, before Piltdown. This is really great stuff.
Oh, it's a boy's adventure, actually.
But you hadn't told me you knew so much about bones and dinosaurs.
Everyone knows a little. What are you looking for? Oh,
just a sec. Here it is. Listen. If you are clever and know your business, you can fake a bone as easily as you can a photograph. That photograph on the wall.
It's genuine, I assure you.
What do you call it? It's a kind of ghosty person or body. Is it emerging?
Yes, ectoplasm. It's the outer granule-free layer of cytoplasm. It's emerging from the seer's middle regions, best we can tell.
A ghost?
A being. I was there. I can confirm that what you see in that photograph really happened.
It gives me the goosebumps.
Nothing like actually being there.
But I bet you still have a tough time convincing people.
Woodward's gotten to you.
No.
He's wrong.
He was never on your side, was he?
The man's a boor.
Oh, a powerful boor, at least in the world of science.
I've never much cared what the powers that be think.
Oh, but that's you. You're a man of power and influence.
But not in the world of science.
No, where it counts, in the court of public opinion.
Oh.
Woodward thinks you're trying to embarrass him the same way he embarrassed you. All these articles he wrote, they make you out to be some kind of idiot, don't they? But who'd imagine you might go so far as to plant a fake skull to prove a point?
Now listen.
No, you listen. This is what I think. I think you planted this fake, and you were sure Dawson would find the skull, and that his vanity would prevent him from detecting a hoax. Then, and this is the part I don't quite get, then I think you were planning to expose the fraud and make your point, the same point you make with this book.
And what might that be?
This is about a man who's ridiculed. He claims he's seen dinosaurs. He knows they exist, but he's frustrated he can't prove it.
What's the point?
The point is, just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. Same with your spirits. You can't prove them scientifically, and then all these fake spiritists pop up all over the place. Everyone thinks it's a sham. You planted this skull to prove everyone can be fooled. At least some of the time. Science, spiritism, it's one and the same. A little fact with a little faith thrown in.
That's nonsense.
You wanted to bring the British Museum down to the level of spiritism.
I resent that.
Okay, okay, you wanted to bring legitimate science up to the level of spiritism.
Now you're mocking
me?
No,
I'm just trying to...
Shut up! Sorry. Sorry that was uncalled for.
I'm just trying to, you know, get to the truth.
Yes. Yes, you're right.
I am?
About the book, the point of it, I mean. The critics didn't get it. You did. Congratulations.
But the skull. It was you. Right?
Yes. Oh, what do you say we just drop the whole thing?
Chance.
Listen, you think you've got it all figured out, and you don't.
No, I don't get it. Why didn't you expose it?
Why didn't I spring the trap, so to speak?
Yes.
I didn't think the sensation would get as big as it did. To reveal the fraud would, at this point, set the wrong people against me.
Oh, what people?
The military people, the chaps at the War Department. If the war hadn't come along, I never would have had to elicit your help.
There is no war.
The one that's coming... Listen, I have an excellent chance of being appointed to the War Planning Commission. Something I want very much to happen. Need to happen. But they might not have me if they know I'm the culprit behind some insidious practical joke, albeit well-intentioned.
So why not leave it alone?
But did the people think the skull is genuine? I happen to believe in science. I never intended to set everyone off on the wrong... course, it irritates me, you know, that there is this thing out there, this Frankenstein's monster that I planted and everyone's talking about and taking seriously. It irks me to the core. What a bunch of idiots. I've completely lost faith in the British Brain Trust. Yes.
Why me?
Sorry?
Why pick me for the job?
Honestly, I didn't think you'd get this far.
Oh, thanks.
No. Nothing to do with your talent. I knew you were smart, but not that smart. And you're not going to like this.
What?
I'd hoped that you'd reveal the idea that Piltdown is a fake, but on the chance that you uncover the truth, the real truth, that is... it would be very easy to squash.
You'll sabotage the article?
If you report that I planted Piltdown, yes, no one will ever see it. But you can, you know. Just tell them it's a fake. That's it. That's all you need to do.
But it would be a lie.
Oh, not necessarily. Think about it.
I won't do it. I'm writing this.
Listen. Your credentials are as a woman who writes about and does daring do. The only way it'll be taken seriously is someone like me gets behind it.
And if I tell people you did it?
I'll sue for slander. Or say I will, and no one will print it. Anyway, the Strand won't print it.
Oh, I'll find another publication.
Good luck.
You can't squash the truth.
Oh, how very American of you.
Oh, I'm finished.
Anyway, what's the right to? Now, that's the discussion we should
be having.
Not
going to get away
with
this.
Deep down.
Even if I have to publish it with my own damn money, people are going to know about this.
The game's afoot, huh?
You creep.
Well, I think everyone should have their say in a free Democrat. Where are you going?
I can't wait to get out of this country.
Rebecca.
I am done with you in every damn way imaginable.
Don't leave.
I'm writing this. I'll publish it and you can read it in hell.
Well, thank God my wife isn't here. Her head'd spin.
I beat you, Doyle. No matter what happens, I beat you.
And nobody's ever gonna know it.
Find another rube for your operation.
But
go to hell.
rube. Yeah, that's good.
More of Fake from Chicago's Steppenwolf Theater Company, starring Frances Guinan and Kate Arrington, in a moment. If you've missed anything so far, you can listen online at latw.org or check the station's website. And send us your comments and suggestions. Our email address is radio@latw.org. This is LA Theater Works.
This play is part of LA Theater Works' Relativity Series, featuring science-themed plays. Major funding for the Relativity Series is provided by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. Support for this program is provided by Audiophile, the magazine for people who love audiobooks. Read online reviews and author profiles, listen to sound clips, and new releases such as LA Theater Works' The Rivalry, the electrifying dramatization of the Lincoln-Douglas debates, starring Paul Giamatti and David Strathairn. More information is available at audiophilemagazine.com.
Take the bait from LA Theater Works' collection of frauds, swindles, and tricksters. Three struggling artists con a well-to-do art collector in The Credot Canvas, starring Hilary Swank.
It's marvelous, isn't it?
We sure think so.
He's even more brilliant with the moon than he is with the sun.
I don't know a damn thing about painting, and even I love it.
In The Foreigner, a retiring Englishman pulls the wool over an unsuspecting community.
This here's Charlie. He don't understand English none. We got a kind of extra circular communication going.
James Marsters and Matthew Wolfe teach the fine art of Bunburying in The Importance of Being Earnest.
If it wasn't for Bunbury's extraordinary bad health, for instance, I wouldn't be able to dine with you at Willis's tonight.
I haven't asked you to dine with me anywhere tonight.
I know, you're absurdly careless about sending out invitations.
These titles and many more are available from our website. Go to latw.org. This is LA Theater Works. Now, LA Theater Works continues our production of Fake by Eric Simonson.
Now let's move on to the research room.
Doug.
Yes, Mr. Moody.
Don't go overboard. We've only so much we can spend. We've already lost two benefactors since Jonathan's presentation, and there's more bad news to come, I'm sure.
First thing we should do is get rid of all these skeletons.
I've nowhere else to put them.
Closets? Storage?
We're full up to the brim.
Look, you ask me what I would do, I'm telling you.
Sorry. I'll let you do your job. Just know there's a limit to our largesse.
If we remove the cases, we may just have enough room for the new equipment and two extra assistants. You mind if we take down that photo?
Darwin? He's been here since the beginning.
Gives me the creeps. Feels like he's staring right at me.
That's what I like about it. All right.
I know Jonathan was crazy about it.
You didn't tell me about you and Kat.
Does it matter?
It mattered when I told Jonathan I was hiring you. You knew he'd quit.
You want to change your mind?
He was a bit of a drag on the institution. I think as things turned out, a clean break is the best.
No more Piltdown.
Good God, no. Anyway... Yes, the skeletons will go someplace.
Kat, what are you doing here?
Should have called.
It's my flat now, you know, that's the way things work.
I forgot a few things. I won't be a minute.
Never mind, it's as well. I wanted to... Here. These are yours, I believe. A few photos you might...
Thanks.
I have my own print.
Your presentation went well.
You did what it was supposed to do. Piltdown is now officially a hoax.
And that is good?
Yes, success.
I saw that your bags are packed.
Oh. Yes, I quit.
I know. Doug told me.
No, not the museum. The hell with them. I quit Oxford.
Oh, but...
It was time. I mean, you always said... Anyway, I'm off on an expedition tomorrow. You remember Patrick Crumb?
Of course.
He's kindly allowed me to tag along.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Well, not really. I feel extra baggage, but... It'll be good for the time being. Give me time to get my own funds, my own team together, you know.
I'm jealous.
Don't be. You have a world ahead. I have something for you. Besides the... I'll be right back.
Jonathan!
Yes?
These photos, some of them are ancient.
I know.
I'd forgotten.
The point of a photo is to remember.
Oh, I love this cottage. This is Bristol.
Blackpool.
Thanks.
I thought you might enjoy this.
What is it?
I did a little research the day the two of you went off to Piltdown. And anyway, that's a photocopy a friend sent me from the States.
Who is Rebecca Eastman?
She was quite famous in her time, apparently. It was published in a magazine from a now defunct wing of the Smithsonian.
Arthur Conan Doyle? That's absurd.
It's quite persuasive, though all hearsay.
Do you believe it?
Do I believe it? Well, that's an interesting question. Do I have faith is a better question. Anything not factual is a question of faith, wouldn't you agree? I mean, you don't just believe in God, you have faith that he exists.
Jonathan.
Well, don't you?
I don't see the difference.
Really, you don't see the
difference? I'm not as bright as you.
You're bright enough.
Stop it!
I don't believe. You know why? Can't see him.
What do you want me to say?
What you believe.
I think I cannot believe that this is all there is. I miss my father.
Right.
I am glad that you have decided to go out in the field again. You are most alive, I think, when you have a problem you cannot solve. For me, it makes me mad. I think...
What?
You are... To me, something I could not solve.
Interesting thing about Charles Darwin. Historical footnote. His daughter died of tuberculosis when she was 10. Did you know that? Darwin watched the whole thing from her bedside. It was hell on earth for Darwin. The slow, painful deterioration of his favorite child. His wife, a devout Christian, stayed at home and tended to the family while the old atheist kept sick bay at a relative's house miles away. It altered his life, it did. Before the death, he was willing to put on a pretense of belief, go to church on Sunday, keep his mouth shut, but afterwards, well, that was that. He'd walk his family to church, let them go to services, while he would walk the grounds looking over Beetles and ferns. Bottomless curiosity. His wife stopped nagging him about the whole hereafter question after a time, but she spent the rest of her life knowing she was never going to be with the man she loved beyond life on earth, that is. Forever and ever. Till the end of time. Amen. But the thing that changed in Darwin... It focused him. With the whole hereafter question completely behind him, he was able to focus all of his energies on his work and understanding the world around him. No distractions and a real passion to get to the bottom of it all, and I admire that. The steely determination to be clinical and emotional at the same time. Now that's talent. Didn't mean to get on then. What were you saying?
That you are a mystery to me.
You as well.
didn't say anything about Arthur Conan Doyle in your presentation.
Well, it's not empirical evidence, is it?
I am done with it. The whole thing, I want to forget it now.
That's a good go. Well, I meant to get some cigarettes. I could stop for tea. That should give you enough. Would you please remember to leave the keys this time?
Of course. Jonathan.
Yes.
Did you ever love me?
I shall always remember you. Forever and ever. Till the end of my time.
This is LA Theater Works' production of Fake by Eric Simonson from Chicago's famed Steppenwolf Theater Company. If you've missed anything so far, or you'd like to listen to this show online, visit us at latw.org or check the station's website for more information. Coming up next, a conversation about Darwin and the search for evolutionary answers with paleoanthropologist Russell H. Tuttle.
Funding for LA Theater Works is provided by listeners like you. For more information on supporting LA Theater Works programs, including live productions, tours, radio broadcasts, library access, and educational outreach, visit our website at latw.org.
I'm joined now by Russell H. Tuttle, a professor of anthropology and evolutionary biology at the University of Chicago. Professor Tuttle has worked in the field of physical anthropology since 1965 and has written extensively on primatology, human anatomy, and hominoid evolution. Professor Tuttle, welcome to LA Theater Works.
Thank you.
Could you briefly tell us the story of the Piltdown Man, quote, discovery, and how it changed our understanding of human evolution?
In the first decade of the 20th century, various fossil bits were announced coming from the Piltdown gravels. It was announced by a man named Dawson, who was an antiquarian. He dealt in antiquities. So these bits of a skull were found. And then a bit later, a partial mandible was found. And people who studied the bits and put them together to try to model a skull decided that this individual had a large human-sized brain case, and the jaw, though, was ape-like. But as people challenged this and would say, for instance, we really need to know what the nose was like, lo and behold, he would find nasal bones. This went on into the 1950s when finally people decided to look at this again, Weiner and LeGros Clark, and there was another man involved in it also, which will come to me shortly. And they all looked at, the three of them looked at this and came up with flat out that this was a fake.
Did they accuse Dawson or?
Dawson died on the eve of when he would have been challenged on this. So there's no way of knowing.
How did he die?
I don't know what cause. He died naturally. He wasn't done in or commit suicide or anything. So it continues on and on as a story.
Darwin's book, The Descent of Man, was published not long before the Piltdown Man hoax. How did the controversy over Darwin's theories pave the way for hoaxes like this?
It not only continued the interest in human evolution, but his Origin of Species and Descent of Man, and the other part of it, the expressions of emotions, finally had an authoritative statement on perhaps how evolution might have occurred other than by special creation. And in fact, Darwin was used as politically as a kind of trope to open the doors to the inclusion of scientific teaching broadly, but including human evolutionary sorts of things in the public schools in Britain and so forth. So now people felt they could ask, okay, how did humans evolve and what did those humans look like at various points in time? And of course, hope that they would find earlier fossils very much in the direction of Homo sapiens, our own species. At the time, there were some Neanderthal specimens from Belgium, Spee and Angie, and there were things from France that are called Dryopithecus, which were truly ape-like things, but nothing in between. So we wanted something, and people wanted it so badly that they accepted Piltdown as a missing link.
So the idea of the missing link is that the jaw was basically an ape, and the rest of the head was humanoid.
Right.
And so that was meant to be the moment in time when both species existed in one head.
Now, you were getting a transitional species, in other words, one that still had ape-like jaws, but that had a big brain. Right. And, of course, it was in England, so it's the first Englishman. There was a lot of Eurocentrism and even British centrism, if you will, going on there, in that they wanted to have their particular kind of people first in line, you know, the first to develop the big brain, and putting it in that locality was very useful for their purposes.
So it had a political overtone as
everything,
well.
Everything in paleoanthropology and almost all of science has a political overtones. You want to have superlatives, the first of this, the biggest of this, maybe the smallest of this. It has to have some special quality to stand out. And whole careers can be based on that. That's why it's so hard to get people to say, oh dear, you know, I probably went ahead of the evidence there. The general trend is to immediately make a story out of everything. This is driven by the media, needless to say, who want a story. If you get too far into the complexities of things, people lose interest, unfortunately, when often that's the most interesting thing for scholars, and it should be for most scientists, too.
Well, on that note, thank you so much, Professor Tuttle. This was really, really interesting.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Russell H. Tuttle, a professor of anthropology and evolutionary biology at the University of Chicago. Fake starred Francis Guinan as Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and Jonathan Cole and Kate Arrington as Rebecca Eastman and Katarina Maris, with Alan Wilder, Coben Goss, and Larry Yondo. Original music and sound design by Barry G. Funderburg. Recording, editing, and mixing engineer, Robert Newhouse. Our director is Eric Simonson. Fake is a co-production with the Steppenwolf Theater Company. Theater Works radio producers are Mike Weisskopf and Ron Lipkin. Matt Coe composed our theme music. For current updates on LA Theater Works radio broadcasts, tour information, or casting updates for our live series, find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter as LA Theater Works. You can email your comments or suggestions to radio@latw.org. I'm Susan Lowenberg, producing director of LA Theater Works.
Support for this program is provided by TheaterMania.com, the heart of theater online. TheaterMania.com features regular and discount tickets, comprehensive listings, news, and online ticketing systems for Broadway, off-Broadway, and theater nationwide. More information is available at TheaterMania.com. Major support for the production of plays in our current live performance season is provided by the Peter Glenville Foundation. Additional support is provided by the Capital Group Company's Charitable Foundation and the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors through the Los Angeles County Arts Commission. This is LA Theater Works.